This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. With all due respect to your grandmother and the things she said should never be discussed in polite company, we are going to talk about religion today, and some rather personal questions are bound to get asked. For example, do you now, or have you ever in the past, considered yourself to be a Christian? If so, what does that mean? On the other hand, if you've only ever viewed Christianity from a distance, have you had thoughts on what that faith is all about? This hour's guests have certainly thought about it. One of them teaches at a Protestant seminary probably best known for its conservative views. Another leads a liberal Protestant dialogue group. Another has long studied Roman Catholicism. The fourth has just published a new book about Quakers. Lots of perspectives ahead, and yours is invited too, as we look at just what is Christianity. And our conversation begins right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. If you hear someone say, "I am a Christian," what do you think those words mean? That question will be much of our focus this hour, and if you've got thoughts about it, please do join us at 888-WMRA-TALK. Later in the hour, we expect to hear from a man who's written almost three dozen books related to this topic and who teaches about what it means to be a Christian at Virginia's Liberty University. But we begin with a wide variety of other perspectives. Reverend John Copenhaver is president of Winchester, Virginia-based group that calls itself the Valley Interfaith Council. Bill O'Meara is a scholar of Roman Catholic theology. And Susan Sachs Goldman has just published a book on the Quakers titled Friends Indeed, the Story of Quaker Social Reform in America. Thank you all for making time for us.
Nice. Great to be here.
Good, Tom.
Well, Susan Goldman, let me turn to you first. I understand that many years of research went into this new book, but there still is some question in your mind about one basic issue. Do Quakers consider themselves to be Christians?
I'm frequently asked that question when I talk about the book, and I've talked to many Quaker friends about this very question. The answer, and I'm not at all intending to be facetious, is that it really depends on which Quaker you ask. There's a great diversity of practice and even belief among Quakers in America today. They certainly began as a Christian sect as part of the Puritan Revolution. But today there are Quakers who are more or less Christocentric. Some are quite universal. Some are evangelical at the other end of the spectrum. So it's a complicated question for Quakers. Many Quakers would say, in response to this question, Quakers are Christians with a theology but not a creed. I don't find that particularly helpful. Maybe my co-panelists can enlighten me on the difference between theology and creed. But I think the answer is that Quakers have a different response to that question depending on their own personal belief.
I'll just add, this is John, that there are several groups that are non-creedal. My wife grew up in the Church of the Brethren, and they say we have no creed except the New Testament. So, but that would be something different from the Quakers, who wouldn't even say that they took the New Testament as a creed. If I understand Quakers, which it would be more that I'm open to the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit guides me in the inner light of Christ. If they're Christian, the inner light of Christ. And I guess if you're more universalist as a Quaker, you'd probably say the inner light of God without the Christocentric side of that being in
or
part
of truth,
it.
The inner light of truth,
And yet they definitely started as Christians in the 1600s.
Very zealous Christians.
They were yet another splinter group off of yet another splinter group. They started as Puritans in the 1630s, 1640s?
Correct. And were quite zealous in their behavior in this maelstrom of dissenting sects in the north of England. When Cromwell's Puritans succeeded in taking over the government, even though Quakers were Puritans as was he, they were persecuted to a worse extent by Puritans than they had been by Anglicans, because they refused to do many of the things that the Puritans insisted on. They refused to be tithed. They wouldn't take oaths. So the authority of the government, even though it was Puritan, was not the authority for the Quakers. And so they went off by themselves. They were persecuted, which I think helped make them cohere as a sect. And eventually many came to this country and started 300 plus years of Quaker experience in America.
And your book, Susan Goldman, is really not so much about the faith or the beliefs of Quakers, although certainly some. It's primarily about how they've translated those beliefs into social action.
Exactly.
Over the past 300 years, specifically in America.
Exactly. Quakers have quite a remarkable and inspiring narrative of social advocacy in the public arena ever since their settlement here in the last quarter of the 17th century. And that impetus, the imperative towards social reform, is a fundamentally religious imperative. Their belief is that for each of us to be able to find that of God within us, a certain serenity, a peaceful world is required. And without peace, without equality and social justice, there can be no peace. So each Quaker is really imbued with the religious belief that he or she must work in the public arena to mitigate the social inequities of the world in order to provide the peace required for the seeking and finding of the light of God within.
Bill O'Meara is a scholar of Roman Catholicism. Does that mesh at all with what most Catholics believe?
Well, there's a deep respect in Catholicism for conscience and the inner spirit of the person. I find this in some quotations from St. Augustine that I know by heart. O truth, O truth, the innermost part of my being longs for thee. So there is in the human mind a deep longing for truth. And to find that fulfilled in your Christian faith, and also in your search to understand that through philosophy and theology. This is a deep personal search, and St. Thomas Aquinas and Augustine also would both be good examples of this deep search for truth.
And Susan, it is also probably worth pointing out that of the different people that we've scheduled as guests today, you are one who was not raised in any version of Quaker, or excuse me, of Christian faith.
That's right.
You wrote about the Quakers, but you're Jewish.
That's right.
From that perspective, do you think that you have maybe a different understanding of what Christianity is all about than you would have if you had been raised as a Christian?
Oh, I think without question. I think without question. I think I think it wouldn't be putting it too harshly to say that my ignorance of Christianity has informed my approach to Quakers, because it's almost a clean slate as I approach their history and their membership in a Christian world. And I think the ignorance that I feel about Christianity probably keeps me, I hope, from having too many imperfect misconceptions about it, so in that sense, maybe I hope there's kind of a blank slate that doesn't carry with it many stereotypes. I hope.
Our guests, author of the new book Friends Indeed, Susan Goldman, plus scholar of Roman Catholic theology from James Madison University, William O'Meara, as well as professor of philosophy and religion from Shenandoah University, John Copenhaver. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Our phone number, 888-WMRA-TALK, in all numbers, translates to 888-967-2825. Next to Charlottesville, Bob, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
My comment is that it bothers me a little bit that you do not have an atheist point of view on the show for two reasons. One is, I remember a philosophy of religion course I took, and the end of it, the professors asked about opinions, and the man said, well, I just have faith. May not make any sense, but I have faith. And the professor said, well, how could you have faith in something so silly? And I just heard the man, one of your guests, saying, a search for the truth. Well, what possible kind of truth could there be in something that's made up? Thank you. I'll take your answer off the air.
Tom signed and said, John, chime in here. By the way, Tom, it's great to be with you and on Virginia Insight again. I'm glad to be here.
Well, John, it's nice to have you back. And I thought if anybody could respond to Bob's question, you could.
Well, yes. First of all, the program's titled Christian Diversity. So I think that that says something about what the focus of the program. And I'd be happy to have a conversation with numerous atheists. I'd be happy to be in a minority among atheists to take a theist perspective. But I don't think that's the focus of this program. And I teach philosophy and religion. And we're, of course, one relies on revelation, the other on reason. And as our Roman Catholic friends would say, they're both good. Catholicism has been a little more positive on reason than the Protestants. Protestants, for most of their history, that's why at Protestant universities, we mostly have Bible courses or in tradition. And Catholics get a heavy emphasis on philosophy because they have that higher sense of reason. Protestants are heavily emphasis on the fall or on that includes human reason. So we've been a little more skeptical about reason.
You also head up this Valley Interfaith Council,
right,
based out of Winchester, stretches through different religious organizations through much of the northern part of the Valley.
Right.
And in that group or among the people that you try to establish dialogue with,
right,
are people who consider themselves Christian, people who don't, people who have other faith traditions, whether it's Buddhist or Hindu or Islam. Are atheists among those that you try to engage in these discussions?
Well, we certainly welcome anyone to the discussions. We do have a person who would, our friend Nancy Tilson Simbach, probably listening, who would classify herself as a spiritual but not religious, which is a fairly large and growing number of people in that category. We have Jews, Christians, Muslims, Baha'i, and Unitarian, and Buddhists mostly in our group. So that's the main groups that we include. So we welcome anyone in those discussions, and our purpose is to promote mutual understanding and respect among the religions of the Northern Shenandoah Valley. So we try to work together to so that there's not, if there's slander against our Jewish friends or our Muslim friends, that we can respond to that. Because we feel that that's an obligation. I feel that as a Christian is an obligation. And that's part of caring for others.
We have this post on our Facebook page from Carolyn, who is responding to our question, what do people mean when they say, I am a Christian? Carolyn says, sadly, that word now implies a political leaning.
Mm. Well, there are Christians both in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and even in the libertarian view. So it doesn't connote just one kind of political view. Generally, Catholics from northern cities saw that government could be of great help in assisting many immigrants in adjusting to America, and they used government to bring about wonderful schools and wonderful governing practices in the 19th and 20th century. For example, the U.S. federal government is late in adopting child labor laws, but some northern states had already done this maybe 20 years before. Mm-hmm. And so deep respect for the human person came from these activist governments who reached out to protect those who needed to be protected from the ravages of coal mines and coal mining. The little children who went down into the mines.
Is that a way of saying that maybe at different times in American history, Christianity was associated with different political leanings than it is today?
Well, I think there's been a rich contrast and a set of different approaches throughout the history. So we need a sense of history and understanding ourselves and an understanding how people might be Christian in reaching out to the problems of our time.
So what do you listening think about what it means to be a Christian? Are there big things happening in the world of Christianity or certain elements of it that you think deserve attention? 888-WMRA Talk is the easy way to remember our phone number. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And this broadcast of Insight continues in just about 1 minute. William O'Meara is a professor of philosophy and religion at James Madison University, where one of his areas of focus is Roman Catholic theology. John Copenhaver is a professor of philosophy and religion at Shenandoah University, as well as president of the Valley Interfaith Council. Susan Sachs Goldman, author of the new book, Friends Indeed, The Story of Quaker Social Reform in America, as we look at this issue of Christian diversity. And we're going next to Winchester. Joyce, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment for our guests, please.
Yes, hi. Hi to everybody. Thanks for being there. This is a great topic and very, very one that seems to be jumping up in our newspaper in Winchester, as John knows all too well. My question has to do with the issue of homosexuality and how it seems to me that a number of Christians seem to see that almost as a matter of salvation, whether you are accepting of that or whether you are opposed to it. And I'm really confused by that, why that is such a huge issue, why we have turned it into almost a be-all and end-all in discussion around our different views of Christianity.
Yes, well, as you know, this is John. I am very familiar with that discussion locally in our community. And I think for many Christians, it's the litmus test for our time. There were other issues, I know, in the Virginia Conference of the United Methodist Church. Churches split north and south over the issue of slavery and the holding of slaves. In fact, in Virginia, we split north and south in our own conference. There was a split in the Presbyterian. Many other churches split north and south. And this issue of homosexuality surprisingly has geographical kind of connotations too, north and south once again. So there are geographical sides to this. The issue of women's leadership in the church and role in the community, another similar polarizing influence. So what happens, I think, is when we get into these periods of time, when these things come to the fore, that Christians feel like they have to take a position on one side or the other, and one marks you as being faithful and holding against what they feel like are threatening things to Christian faith, and others don't feel that same threat and feel like that it's a matter of justice. So for me, it's a matter of justice. For conservatives, I think it's more a sense of faithfulness to the Bible. How can you possibly believe this when the Bible, every time the Bible mentions homosexuality, six times it condemns it? How can you hold that position? And that gets us to, I won't try and tackle that right now, but I would happy to do that sometime later.
Bill O'Meara, is it possible that this can be related at all to more recent times, perhaps 50 or 60 years ago, with debates over divorce and what the Bible prohibits with divorce and how much of a contentious that issue that was at one point in time?
But there's always a profound respect for individual conscience in Catholicism. For example, there's a distinction in Catholic thought between the external forum of the church, which might not annul a marriage between two Catholics, but in the internal forum of conscience, one of the partners may believe that the marriage was not entered into good faith by the other partner, and in good conscience, the person may remarry, not in the church, but civilly, and also take the full sacraments of the church. This is done quietly, but actually in a small community like Harrisonburg, with actually full awareness and acceptance by the Catholic community. And so I think there could also be a profound respect for the individual conscience of the homosexual Christian, that even though there have been these explicit condemnations of homosexuality, there have been profound changes in recent times. The American Psychiatric Association no longer teaches that homosexuality is a sexual disorder. And so our very understanding of the nature of homosexuality, and actually Catholic thought and the bishops agree, it's deeply rooted. It's not a personal choice. It's not a lifestyle, but it's so deep within the person. And each person must come to his or her own decision on the way in which they reach out to God's love. This profound respect for conscience and for the truth that you seek but you always are in dialogue with others in your community and indeed outside your community to challenge yourself and to grow.
Joyce, do I hear implied in your question that you have a sense that this should not be as big a deal in Christianity today as
absolutely.
It seems to be?
Absolutely. It is. It saddens me so to see how it's just there's so much anger and I'll call it hatred and prejudice and I'm the mom of a gay woman and I'm a Christian and I am a faithful Christian and I feel like I try to understand and respect other people and I think that that's what your show is doing so beautifully and it just saddens me that there are some folks who can't seem to come to the table and have a discussion even if we agree to disagree.
Joyce, thanks so much for taking the time to share that with us. We're going to take now some questions off our Facebook page. Well, at least one. This is Lauren who wrote in, I have friends who are Greek Orthodox. Their celebration of Easter seems to almost always come later in the year than other churches. Why is that? And are Orthodox Christians much different in their belief than Roman Catholics?
Oh, well, I'll take a stab at that, John. This is Bill. the Western Church created the Gregorian calendar, and the Russian calendar, the Greek Orthodox calendar, had a different orientation. And so that's the basic reason behind the difference in dates. But the key difference between Orthodox Christians and Catholics and Protestants is there are like these three great traditions of being Christian. There's a sense of authority in Catholicism and the Orthodox Church. The Catholics have deep respect for the Pope, the bishops, and the faith of all the believers. But the Orthodox Church would have profound respect simply for the bishops' leadership and the sense of faith of all the believers. That's part of the difference in authority. But the Orthodox Church has a beautiful concept called theosis, which means becoming God, becoming more like God in the fullness of your life and in every moment of your life. And they're deeply oriented to mysticism. They are the origin of the famous prayer called the Jesus Prayer. When Jesus was walking by someone, he called out, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me, a sinner. And the Russian Orthodox monks created the tradition of saying that prayer again and again and again. So it's like, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me, a sinner, Jesus. And it sort of simplifies to one word. And Jesus becomes a mantra, which kind of opens up one's mind to the beauty of God's love. And this sense of mysticism actually is rich in the Orthodox Church, but it's present in the Western Church, both Catholic and Protestant.
Next to Harrisonburg, Jay, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please, for our guests, Bill O'Meara, Susan Goldman, and or John Copenhaver.
Sure. The question you had that what does it mean to be a Christian today? I believe it means to follow the example of Jesus, and I believe I do that as a member of the Baha'i faith. I've been a Baha'i most of my life, and I believe that I was raised a Gnostic Christian before I became a Baha'i at 16, and I believe I'm more of a Christian, more like a Christian now at age 55 than I was as a child raised as a Christian.
This is John. I let people call themselves what they want to. That's been my, I respect your position. I have a lot of friends who are Baha'i. My experience is the Baha'is, of course, came later. And so like other traditions, usually they incorporate out of other traditions. Christianity took much from Judaism. Islam takes much from Christianity and Judaism. Baha'i takes from all of those and from Asian religions as well. I don't have any objection to what you've said. I think, Orthodox Christians probably would, I mean, if you're looking in terms of doctrinal views, you're probably not a Unitarian. I mean, not a Trinitarian. So, you know, there would be some distinction there, but I don't have any objections to what you've said.
What? I love what you said. this is Bill. After the beautiful set of verses in the 25th chapter of Matthew, when the Son of Man comes in glory and he divides the sheep and the goats. And the sheep are those who, when I was hungry, you gave me food. When thirsty, you gave me drink. When I was a stranger, you took me into your home. When naked, you clothed me. And when I was ill, you came to my help. And when in prison, you visited me. And people ask, well, when did we do this, Lord? And Jesus says, when you did this to the least of my brethren, you did it to me. And that is Christianity at its deepest. I agree with you.
Jay, thank you so much for taking the time to call in. Joining us now by phone is a man who serves as chair of the Department of Philosophy and Theology, as well as a distinguished research professor at Liberty University, Gary Habermas. Reverend Habermas, thanks so much for making time for us.
Well, I'm glad to be with you, but join the show.
So what does it mean to be a Christian?
Well, I guess it depends on what perspective you take. I think in the earliest church, I'm guessing, whoever calls himself Orthodox, whatever their take, the original definition was, at least it's defined in the New Testament, is somebody who believes in the deity, death, and resurrection of Jesus. That was the original definition that you find in Paul or in the early Acts sermon accounts. And it's broadened over the years to represent, you know, the books we call the Gospels and so on. So it takes different definitions. But usually when I try to give it that nuance, I try to include the broader groups. I mean, in my own life, before I went on for a secular PhD, my master's degree is from a Jesuit university. And I enjoyed that tradition immensely. So.
And you were ordained in a Baptist church, but for a number of years were a pastor at a Brethren church?
Correct. In fact, my only pastoral experience is in the Brethren denomination in Michigan.
And you have actually, of the almost three dozen books that you've written about different aspects of Christianity, you've co-authored a number of those with people whose views I would think you would have to say are considerably more politically liberal to your sort of politically conservative?
That would be a good question. I don't know where they're coming from in all those fields. We have our discussions. I've got, again, been listening to some of the discussions here. I have a number of, you may be surprised, but very good friends who are atheists and other religious perspectives, and it's good to watch football with them. It's good to come have them over for a chat about their beliefs, and we have a good time together.
Well, Gary, we have this question from Robert that came in our Facebook page that I'm going to ask all of our guests to chip in if they want, but I was going to start with you if that's okay. Robert says here, in my experience, the people who feel it is important that they tell you they are a Christian are more often than not conservative and may be justifying their actions or their politics with that label. Many of the liberal Christians I know, myself included, are more likely to follow the advice of St. Francis, namely, preach the gospel at all times and only when necessary use words.
Words, yeah. Yep, when they just named the new pope, I said to my wife, that's my famous quote by Francis of Assisi. I just said that to her a couple days ago. And I've been watching those proceedings with great interest. Well, I would call myself conservative theologically. I would call myself I try to be careful how I define this, since it's different for everybody. But in a lot of social issues like feeding and education and things like that, I take some more moderate and liberal views.
So you believe that part of the responsibility of being a Christian is to take care of those who can't so well take care of themselves?
Absolutely, 100%.
But when you talk about being conservative theologically, that puts you on the side of being against gay marriage, believing that abortion should be illegal, that those sort of what are often called in the political sphere social issues.
Right. Yes. Yes. And as we were talking about that the other day, in preparation for the program, I saw some of the differences that people might have in those definitions. When I think of socially liberal, I think of feeding programs. I think of gun control views, education, what should we do with our military, and things like that. I would much rather see us invest in people programs, and I think that's the teaching of Jesus. His famous when he was asked by the expert to categorize the greatest rules, Jesus reportedly said, "Love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and love your neighbors yourself." And as I try to tell my grad students regularly, the second greatest command is to love others as we love ourselves. And it seems like even as conservatives, we have an awful lot of other things up there at second place when that's not Jesus's rubric.
Tom invited me to join in. I would say one thing that I think distinguishes, say, what I would call maybe a mainline or evangelical on these issues, or social justice maybe better than mainline, would be that traditionally I think that the more conservative Christians have focused more on what you mentioned as social issues, abortion, personal sexuality issues, whereas liberals have focused more of the attention on what would be considered social justice issues about environmental, war and peace, justice. But I think there are many things that we share and have historically shared that people don't recognize. The evangelicals, along with the Quakers, were early opposed to slavery. There were a lot of evangelicals involved in child labor issues in my own tradition of John Wesley. He's an evangelical in that sense. So, and concern for the poor, I think, should transcend every Christian denomination. I think that should be universal. But traditionally, there has been a stronger emphasis on the social justice side for mainline and social justice, and a little more focus on the internal and personal matters of morality among evangelicals.
I agree. I think that's fair.
Susan Goldman, author of the book about Quakers, Friends Indeed. You've got to have questions about what it means to be a Christian,
not being one yourself. I think some of the conversation that we've just been having has to do with what I call the golden rule, which is to do unto your neighbor as you would have them do unto you, which is fundamentally at the heart of certainly of Quakerism, but it's also at the heart of Judaism. We now come to think of these things as the Judeo-Christian tradition. I'm not sure that's theologically correct, but the political take that one assumes, believing oneself to be a Christian, obviously vary tremendously. And even within the Quaker, the Religious Society of Friends, while they are known historically and today to be a very progressive, a socially progressive group, in different parts of the country and in different meetings, these issues of homosexual marriage and abortion, historically of slavery, have been most contentious. So clearly there's something beyond the golden rule that describes Christianity in terms of its application to our daily life.
Well, to you listening to this conversation, you are welcome to join in here on Virginia Insight. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call us at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Got some thoughts on what it means to be a Christian? A story about how you came to see your understanding of that religion differently at some point in your life. 888-967-2825. And we'll be back in just about 60 seconds. Our guest this hour, conservative Protestant theologian Gary Habermas, liberal Protestant theologian John Copenhaver, scholar of Roman Catholic theology Bill O'Meara, and author of the new book about the impact of Quaker social movements in America, Susan Goldman. I'm Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. Any of you have questions for each other?
Well, I wanted to comment, this is Bill O'Meara, on religions being so devoted to moral issues. We remember the time of Prohibition, when out of religious fervor, we prohibited the making and purchase and sale of alcohol. and the great difficulties this led to in the 1920s, and then there was the repeal of prohibition. And so even though persons might believe that a certain practice is immoral or highly immoral, in a society of great diversity like the United States, it may be highly imprudent to impose one's own complex moral judgments on everyone in the country. So we have to realize we live in a plurality of religious traditions in which we're not just from Europe anymore. We have people from Africa, Asia, Russia, Kurdistan, Iran, Iraq, and we have to respect the religious views of all and their freedom of religion, and we should not be imposing one absolute moral vision on all people in this country.
There's this theory that if I keep my mouth shut, the rest of you will talk.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, and I think that the difficulty, though, is that there has been, for much of our history, a presumption of a Christian nation, that we were founded by Christians, and I know that there are issues there, and I don't agree with that, because I think there was enough diversity in the very early stages of our history that we couldn't call ourselves that, nor do a lot of our teachings reflect that. But I think there has been a concern about a loss of Christian hegemony, I might say, in the last half century. Now, that's hit me as a mainline Protestant probably harder than anyone, because up until maybe, the 60s or 70s, there was sort of a mainline establishment, and that's been displaced by evangelical establishment. So, but now I think that the evangelical establishment is feeling displaced, and I think that's some of the tension is around that. And that would be my answer to Bill, and maybe you might say something about that.
Well, actually, the mainline churches are not growing as the evangelical churches are. They are growing tremendously. Mm-hmm. So the most conservative theological positions and the most assertive now in political attempts to reform the country are coming from these growing evangelical churches.
I think you're mistaken on one point of that, which is the Southern Baptist Church is leveled off, and I don't think there is this same trajectory of growth among the conservative churches now. Now, Gary may be able to speak to that more carefully than I could, but I think that there's been a leveling off and among the growth in evangelical or conservative Christianity.
Yeah, I can't really answer that. That's not the... like I said, I have it's part of my ordination, that was mentioned earlier, a brethren and background. And I've heard that. I've heard numbers going from 14 to 17 million, and I've heard that there are fewer baptisms. That's often how they're counted. And I just saw an article just two days ago, that church attendance in specific denominational churches has fallen off greatly in the last couple decades. So I don't recall the exact percentages, but I think there have been a lot of changes.
We're going next to Stewart's Draft. Robin, thank you for calling in. Your question or comment for our guests, John Copenhaver, Bill O'Meara, Susan Goldman, and or Gary Habermas, please.
Well, I guess I just wanted to go along with what they were saying about like numbers dropping off. I was a raised Christian, and now I kind of have a hard time. Like, I don't know what box I would check if I was asked on a questionnaire, because I'm now a nurse and I've gone through a lot of ethical training, and I've kind of been taught that you should treat other people the way they want to be treated, not necessarily the golden rule, treat others the way that you want to be treated. I kind of don't want to associate with a lot of people that call themselves Christians because I don't have all the same views that they have. So I just wonder what their thoughts were on, you know, the new generation, or maybe I would be considered a liberal Christian. I'm not really sure where I fit in there, but yeah, it's a struggle for me personally because there's so many different categories and like where you really fit in.
Gary Habermas, could you hear Robin at all?
I'm sorry, could I do what?
Could you hear our caller, Robin?
I could hear about half of what you said, yes.
Okay. In essence, part of what I'm taking from Robin's call is, although she grew up in the Christian faith, she considers herself less Christian now because she has difficulty spending time with people who seem sort of judgmental. Is that a fair recoloration of what you were saying, Robin?
Yes.
Okay. Do you find any truth to that in your experience, Gary, that the different people who call themselves Christian because they see their priorities of what that means so differently have trouble even talking to each other?
I think that probably is true. I find it strange. I think Christians should not have that kind of feeling, or that they have to take so strong a stand on things that they can't, no matter how conservative, that they can't talk. I mean, if it is true that Jesus is the Christian, you know, the center of the Christian faith, I mean, I find it interesting that Jesus is called, you know, through the rumor mill, through the gossip of his time, he's called a wine bibber and a friend of publican and sinners. And if he were a total stiff and somebody who would say, I'm not going to talk to you, you're all losers, I wonder why he kept getting invited to places where, you know, others were there that didn't agree with him.
Robin, thank you so very much for your call. John Copenhaver, did you want to say something more about what you think it means to be a Christian?
Yes. I would say there are three elements to being a Christian, which are beliefs, attitudes, and practices. So it includes all of those, and I guess the famous statement from Paul that a lot of Christians would use, we are saved by grace through faith, and that not ourselves, lest anyone should boast. So the idea in Pauline Christian understanding is that we're saved by God's love in Jesus Christ. The faith that we have in that is not our own, that God gives us that faith. It's not our own, so it's not anything that we can brag about. So that's a sort of a central belief, I would say, among Christians. But I think that we imbalance those things, and I think the emphasis since the time of the Enlightenment has been on beliefs. It's the idea that believing is what's the most important thing about Christianity is a relatively new thing. I mean, there's many of things in the New Testament about believing, but we've made that the central one, and I think it's in response to the Enlightenment, the knowledge they gained. And so we treat the scriptures like it's a science book almost, and so we get our knowledge from that.
But so what did it used to be if it wasn't what I believed made me Christian? What didn't make me Christian 300 years ago?
More what Bill was saying earlier about a live faith for me. Jesus is, and this is a clear consensus teaching among biblical scholars, what was Jesus's key teaching? It's about the reign or the kingdom of God. And that kingdom of God is one of living so, for me, it's a sense that I understand that there's this concern for the poor, that a concern for justice, and that justice will lead to peace. And, of course, the idea that the knowledge of God will cover the earth as the waters cover the sea. There's this idea of the growth of knowledge of God deep inside. And so to me, then, it's about this following Jesus. One of our earlier callers, I think, talked about my Christianity is about following Jesus' teaching and his life. And so I think that's it, learning to love our neighbors as ourselves and loving God with our whole heart. And I think, it also means being a part of a community of faith. A community of faith is a struggle because you have a diversity of views, so you struggle. There's a tension with it. I think it's all right to have tension. You're going to have differences of opinion. I have some disagreements with my own denomination, United Methodist. We disagree on the issue of homosexuality right now. That's a tension that I welcome, but that's a part of what it is to be a Christian, but I'm a part of that community. I don't agree with it, but I can live with that tension and listen carefully to what the church says. I may disagree with it. So for this caller who called in, I would say find a community that doesn't tolerate, that welcomes you, that makes you feel included and does not exclude you, and that calls you to be your best. And I think that church community should call us to greater generosity. It should challenge us. And that's, I don't look for the church just for comfort. That's great, but should challenge me to be more faithful and to live out what I would call orthopraxis rather than orthodoxy.
Bill O'Meara, the fact that we now have a pope for the first time who's taken the name Francis, is that an indication of a different direction for Roman Catholicism?
I think so. I mean, he himself explained why he chose that name. Just as he was about to be elected, the Cardinal Archbishop from Brazil turned to him and said, "Don't forget the poor." And then he remembered the name Francis, who reached out deeply to the poor. He took a vow of poverty himself, and he loved creation. The animals loved St. Francis, as the stories go. And he reached out to people and he served them. The way Jesus would touch a leper, Francis of Assisi would touch a leper. And so there's a new deep respect in Catholic theology for the richness of experience, that theology is an attempt to explain the living faith experience, and that living faith experience is richer than any one theologian, whether it's Thomas Aquinas, Augustine, Karl Rahner, or Richard McBrien, a great theologian from Notre Dame. So there's a richness of our experience in the living practice of faith, the praxis.
Gary Habermas at Liberty University. Billy Graham used to famously preach about the lessons of St. Francis of Assisi, which surprised some coming from a conservative evangelical preacher. But I wonder, based on what I've heard so far, including your comments, Gary, about action and treating your neighbor, love thy neighbor being such an important lesson, if you think that we may be moving toward a time where through action, through this focus on doing good, no matter what else you believe as a Christian, that that might lead to more unity and less divisiveness among Christians?
Well, I think that's an important concept. I think sometimes Christians, whatever their tradition, it's always true that we get off on our own little hobby horses, and oftentimes what is, at least in conservative circles, I can tell you, what bothers them most about each other, that's one conservative to another, they'll argue about periphery things. And I tell my grad students again, why is it that we get the most bothered about what we might call second or third order doctrines or second or third order practices instead of primary ones? Now, I do think, being conservative, I do think in the early church, there is an emphasis on what even in the critical literature today called early creeds, the preaching sermon points in Acts, the early texts like Romans 1, Romans 10, 9, Philippians 2, where doctrine played an important part. And I think that 1-2 punch is what distinguishes the conservative arm. I would say it's good doctrine, good practice, but oftentimes conservatives are really slow on the second one, on the good practice, and I think that's where they leave out so many of the teachings. I mean, it's said that there are 2,000 verses in the Old and New Testaments on social justice, and I was speaking on that one time at a university out west, and someone said, "You know, I'm sick and tired of these 2,000 verses. Where are they?" Well, a study Bible recently came out, put out by the American Bible Society, I think, and World Vision, and they color coded these 2,000 verses. I mean, they're there, and there's a lot of comments, you know, about the poor and widows and taking care of folks. And I think conservatives are often most slow about getting into those groups. If you pushed them, I think they would say, "Yep, that's thoroughly biblical," but they, you know, get off on other things. And the one caller who said, you know, she was put off by Christians who argue, I am too. So
we're almost out of time, and I want to give Susan Goldman, author of this book that it took her some 10 years to write, Friends Indeed, the Story of Quaker Social Reform in America, chance for the last word. What is it that you most think people ought to know about Quakers, or that you find most inspiring about them, that you'd take 10 years to write a book about them?
I think it is this devotion, this remarkable narrative of social reform in America. The Quakers have participated and led in all the social reform issues in our country. They've certainly not done it alone, but they've been conspicuously well represented because they walk the walk. They believe that everyone does, that there's a perfectibility in man, and that each of us, men, women of all races, deserve the opportunity to find that of God within himself. And they've sought to erase discrimination and injustices so that that can be true. And I think we could all use an example like that as we face the daunting challenges of inequity and injustice in today's world.
Our guests have been Susan Sachs Goldman, author of Friends Indeed, The Story of Quaker Social Reform in America, Bill O'Meara, scholar of Roman Catholic theology and professor of philosophy and religion at James Madison University, John Copenhaver, president of the Valley Interfaith Council and professor of philosophy and religion at Shenandoah University, plus with us by phone, Gary Habermas, author of numerous books on Christianity, as well as chair of the Department of Philosophy and Theology at Liberty University. Thank you also very much for making time for us.
Thank you, Tom. It's been a pleasure.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And if you go to that page, you will find links to more information about each of our guests. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.